This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Diddy the Dangler. Sworn testimony that Sean Combs dangles a model with his bare hands off a 17th floor balcony. Her life precariously in the balance, and the jury reacts not in a good way. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories, and I want to thank you for being with us.
But he's a screamer, he's a shouter, he's a violent man, he could throw things.
Oh no, Diddy's really angry this time. Ooh.
He gets so angry, he forgets to breathe. If he was a bully.
Diddy was menacing, threatening, intimidating.
She talked about how he was violent, he was threatening.
Suddenly, all those jokes taste like dirt in my mouth. Can you imagine, just think about it, being held off a balcony 17 floors up and dangled? This is different from the beatings that we've heard about, the kickings, the beatings, the draggings by somebody's hair, the threats, the broken arm slammed in a door. Actually dangling someone, holding them by their armpits off a 17th floor balcony. Joining us, an all-star panel, but first, I want to go straight out to the Monahan Federal Courthouse. Standing by is investigative reporter Lauren Conlon, star of Pop Crime TV. Well, Lauren, the jury finally hears what we heard about rumors of months ago, the balcony dangling incident. What happened?
Brianna Bongolin finished her testimony today, and the cross-examination was a bit brutal. Now, I believe the defense was going for impeachment, but Brianna Bongolin showed us a photograph yesterday of the bruise that Diddy allegedly gave her during this balcony incident, and it did elicit quite a reaction from the jury. The bruise looked bad. There was a puncture hole that appeared to be in the middle of it, and we also saw a photo of her, or the back of Brianna, in a neck brace as well. She said her ex-girlfriend took this photo. At one point during the cross, Nicole Westmoreland got her to say that, yes, she had the neck brace on. She took it for the photo, and then she took it off. During redirect, they did sort of reiterate, well, she wore the neck brace more than just the one photo. But back to the impeachment, the photo of the bruise, we saw the metadata behind that photo, and it was taken on September 26, 2016. And this was either the morning after or kind of the morning of the incident. Now, the defense said, are you aware, Ms. Bongolin, that Sean Combs and Cassie Ventura were in New York and New Jersey during this time for the Bad Boy reunion tour? And then they had a charity dinner in New York City. And, you know, she didn't know, or she didn't recall. And then we were shown an invoice from the Trump Hotel. And it was the guest was Frank Black, which we know now is one of Diddy's aliases that he used to check into hotels. And he was there, per the date, from September 24th to September 29th. So that was quite a moment. I know I did see some faces in the gallery. One of the jurors looked a bit surprised. So that was a bit shocking.
You know, it's never a good thing, Lauren Conlon, when the jurors physically react. Like, you see them rear back or make a face or hold their head. And we've been seeing a lot of that. You know, it's almost as if, to Dr. Bethany Marshall joining us, psychoanalyst out of the LA jurisdiction. She is now seen on Peacock. She is the author of Deal Breakers, and you can find her at drbethanymarshall.com. Dr. Bethany, I heard Rob Shooter say this a while back, who's also with us today. He's known Sean Combs for years. And Shooter, you stated at one point, he lives his life like it's a movie. And I'm going to follow up after you answer. It seems like he thinks he's in a movie, you know, where you dangle somebody off a balcony, like in a James Bond movie, and those, you know, they typically drop them. But this is real. He took a grown woman, and I'm sure he's as high as a kite on whatever drugs he was on, and hauls her off a balcony like he's the villain in a movie.
Yeah, it's cinematic, isn't it? But I think you're being kind by saying James Bond. This is The Sopranos. This is really, really outrageous behavior. And I think it's hard for people to even understand this. If you were not there, if you did not experience this, this doesn't sound real. And so that's why this testimony is so important, Nancy, because it's going to paint this picture. It's going to make it really, really vivid. And most importantly, it's going to make it really, really real. It happened.
Yeah, he's right, Dr. Bethany Marshall. And he knows. He has described how Combs gets angry and the veins stick out of his head, in his face. And he throws a major tantrum because he can. Because he can get away with it. But I'm not afraid of heights at all. But when I go up really high and look down, I can feel a tingle go over my whole body. I guess it's something instinctive that your body knows you're in danger. The 17th floor, Bethany, and this woman was hanging. She was dangling. Her body was not attached to the balcony at all. Her whole self was hanging over 17 floors down.
You know, Nancy, acting like you're a hero in a Marvel movie would fit criteria for something called histrionic personality disorder. Histrionics are when somebody acts very dramatic. They have rapidly fluctuating emotions that appear deep in nature, but they're not deep at all. They're merely designed to get attention. So he has grabbed everybody's attention in his life. So it reinforces all this dramatic behavior. I would also guess low levels of conscientiousness, impulse control disorder, intermittent explosive disorder, and also I would suspect drug abuse because the impulsivity is so bad and combined with aggression, and low levels of remorse regarding actually risking another person's life.
You know, I'm thinking about everything you said. And, you know, back to you, Rob Shooter is a PR guru who worked for Combs for a really long time, not anymore. Host of Naughty But Nice podcast. That's at Rob Shooter, and that's S-H-U-T-E-R, not Shooter, bang, bang, Shooter. RobShooter.substack.com. Rob, when you say, now, she said a hero, I would say a supervillain. Where, you know, like in a cartoon even, where you see someone, a character hanging somebody off a balcony, and that's funny in a cartoon. But the fact that he held her without dropping her is a miracle. I mean, the woman still has night terrors about it. And those are real, by the way. I still, to this day, sometimes have night terrors about cases that I investigated and prosecuted because they were so heinous. But it's like he's living in a movie. And you said that weeks ago, and I really didn't get it.
Yeah, absolutely, Nancy. He plots his life out. Not only that it's one big movie, but almost like it's different episodes. Throughout the day, his schedule, it's every hour. And I remember he once said to me, you can start over every hour. A lot of people, if you're having a bad day, you wait until tomorrow to start over. Not Puff. Every time there's a new hour, it's a new chapter in the life of Diddy, and what happened before doesn't matter. It's what happens right now. It's a really odd skill that he has, but it's a skill that has served him very well until now.
But you know what, Rob Shooter? I think that in court right now, it's just another episode for him. It's just another vignette in his movie that's playing in his mind.
Yeah, I think you're right. And he would think this actually perversely might be a great episode. If this is a movie, for somebody to be in this much trouble and to bounce back, that is the type of story that he's telling himself. My insiders tell me, Nancy, I'm a reporter now, and all my sources, Diddy sources, tell me he's convinced that this is going to come to an end and he's going to be okay. And already people in his inner circle, Nancy, are plotting the comeback tour, new music, What's he going to do next?
Oh, and that's stop. Sorry. Hold on. What did you say about a comeback tour?
There's going to be a tour. There's going to be an album. We've seen his family with a documentary crew every day. These are not people that think this is the last chapter, the end of the movie. This is the middle of the movie, and they plan to have a big comeback story.
Well, Sean Combs' family prepares their documentary to air after the verdict, and his enablers prepare his comeback tour when he is found not guilty, according to them, not according to me. A lot of people have been diddified. Joining me is a special guest. It's Armon Wiggins, entertainment legal affairs commentator, host of podcast The Armon Wiggins Show. And I want you to see what happened to him outside the courthouse.
Oh, okay. Clock that. Clock that. Let's go viral. This is crazy.
Okay, that from our friends at TMZ, Harvey Levin. You know, Armon Wiggins, please don't laugh, because you never know when somebody comes up to you on the street and starts screaming at you, whether they are high on meth, whether they have a gun. So, you know what? Next time, please just don't engage. Don't be the hero. Just say, thank you, and walk away. But yet, you engaged. Armon Wiggins, what was she screaming?
Honestly, she just was trying to go viral. She was screaming, let's go viral, mother. She was saying a bunch of flagrant obscenities to me. And I think it was just because she saw me going live. This court, this case has become a zoo and a breeding ground for all walks of life. And people are just coming. They're trying to get their piece of the moment, their piece of the viral moment, and just shouting out and making stuff up. So there was a woman that got put out of the courtroom. This woman was heckling. So it was actually, I didn't even know who this woman was. She just saw me on live camera. She's figured, okay, this is a content creator. He goes viral for his Diddy News, and let me go and trash him in his live feed, and hopefully I'll make the news.
A lot of people are, they've been diddified. And without knowing any of the evidence or ignoring the little bit of evidence they do know, they're convinced that Sean Combs is innocent. You know, I got into it with Ray J again, but I want you to hear, you mentioned a woman that got dragged out of court by armed guards. Well, listen to her.
Diddy, everyone thinks this is a joke, laughing at Black man legacy being destroyed. Everyone has been laughing. I don't care if it sounded funny, it's not funny.
No, it's not funny for women to get beaten, raped, drugged, dragged, over and over and over. And it's not just one woman. It's not just Cassie Ventura. It's one after the next after the next. That was from our friends at BBC on TikTok. Back to you, Armon Wiggins, who was assaulted outside of the courthouse. I just heard her talking about the legacy of Sean Combs and wrapping it into the legacy of Black men, that they should not be wrongfully attacked. What about Black women? What about them? Do they not matter in the Black legacy? What about them? What about all the women that we're hearing from? What about Capricorn Clark? What about one after the next woman of color that has gotten a beating from Sean Combs? And do you know how close it was for this woman hanging off a balcony by high on something, Sean Combs? But yet, no one seems to hear that. What about these women and the legacy of Sean Combs? Are you kidding me? It sounds like exactly what Ray J and I were arguing about on TMZ. You're saying the same thing. He's not crazy. He's a celebrity. Everybody loves him.
In regards to the women, I think that the prosecution is doing a great job, because one thing that we cannot get around is whenever they played that video and when they got into that forensic audio and video and you saw Cassie being yoked up and dragged, I don't care what you're talking about as far as Diddy's legacy, you have a heart, you have an emotion, and you feel every blow, every kick. And so I think that everybody in that room, man, woman, child, they felt that. And there's no way that he's getting around that. And the prosecution makes sure every day they play that video, just in case you may have forgotten what we're really here for.
He had a lot of money. He liked to flash it around. He wanted to get free clothes, free dinners, free tickets if he went out to clubs, restaurants.
A designer scarf, think Hermes, if I'm even saying that correctly, was used as a wick.
But he is benefiting quite a bit from this. He is taking business deals, the sale of his clothing, his perfume, everything.
There were bags and bags and bags of designer clothing that he'd never worn, that was just sitting there. It's a life of excess.
Sheeter, what is it with rich people? I've never seen such cheap individuals as rich people. The more money they have, the more they pinch the pennies.
Yeah, maybe that's the reason that they are rich. Puff, this is a little secret on Puff. Puff is one of the cheapest person I've ever met. He didn't really want to pay for anything. So when he had to sign over that $100,000 to blackmail to take that tape from the hotel, to him, that would be really, really painful. He does not want to part with his own money. When he did those big white parties, Nancy, let me tell you a secret. He didn't pay a penny. All of those were sponsored by people. He was very good at getting other people to
pay. Okay, but wait. The white parties that resulted, and that's everybody at the get-go, we talked about them a lot. The white parties are where everybody is supposed to dress in white. Whatever. You're saying they were sponsored? What do you mean by that? Like, by who? I bet they're proud now. I sponsored a white party that turned into a freak-off, that turned into a felony indictment.
Individuals, companies would sponsor those parties.
What company? Like a beer company, a champagne company? Who?
Absolutely.
Who would sponsor that?
If you look on the Step and Repeat, these photographs, they have logos behind the celebrities. Where I have a poster behind me, these celebrities have those Step and Repeats for one reason. Not to send you nice pictures, but to promote these brands. They pay to be on that wall behind all the celebrities. So look closely and look at some of those brands, and maybe some of those brands today have something to say about this, because they put up the money that let these parties happen. Without their money, there would have been no parties. Puff was not paying.
Whoa. So the richer they are, the cheaper they are. I want to get back to the facts. And I want you to percolate, Sheeter, on other penny-pinching maneuvers of Sean Combs, because I want to hear every single one. Because now I'm seeing his family and all these designer clothes. I mean, for Pete's sake, the wick to the Molotov. Hey, Bethany, you out of the whole panel know how to say Hermes. Is that how you say the scarf? You've told me 50 times. But
Hermes.
Oh, okay. Hermes. Okay. Who else besides Sean Combs would use a Hermes scarf, Sheeter? I mean, it just, like I say, take out an ad on Third Avenue. And I always use Third Avenue because that's where Court TV was. Third Avenue, there'd always be a big billboard right outside Court TV at 39th and 3rd. Take out an ad. That was my scarf. Signed, Diddy. I mean, who else is going to use a designer scarf for a wick for a Molotov? Really?
I couldn't name another person who would do that, Nancy. I do have a fun story, though, or a disturbing story about Diddy being cheap. I remember he was doing a photo shoot, and he insisted we pay his friend, or the magazine pay his friend, $10,000 to groom him, to do his hair. $10,000 this haircut was. The magazine paid. They paid the $10,000, and when I saw the pictures, Nancy, he was wearing a hat. He didn't even show his hair. He did not pay for that. It was a scam, and he made his friend a lot of money.
I wonder if the friend gave him a kickback. Okay, I could talk about that all day, but I got to get back to the testimony. Back to the courthouse, standing by very patiently, is investigative reporter Lauren Conlon. She is a star of Pop Crime TV on YouTube. Lauren, after all of that getting dangled off a balcony 17 floors up, she was in, I think it was a FaceTime, and she actually apologized to him.
When she was asked if Sean Combs had reached out, or if anybody reached out, she said yes, he did try to reach out to her through FaceTime a day or two later, and she kind of said that, you know, she said she didn't want any problems. He didn't say much. He just kind of had his hands on his head like this. She also testified that Cassie came out of the room, out of her bedroom at a certain point and said, did he dangle you over a balcony? Almost in disbelief.
To Sydney Sumner joining us, Crime Stories investigative reporter, we also learned, and you're writing down every significant thing that happens in the courtroom. Didn't she go on to talk about nightmares and night terrors that she had as a result of that incident?
Absolutely, Nancy. She said that she would wake up screaming, or her partner would overhear her screaming in her sleep. And this is something that has severely affected her going forward. She says over time that PTSD has seemed to lessen a little bit, but it took a very long time to get back to a place of feeling secure. And she said she was terrified to go to police. Like, she was so afraid of the violence escalating that she didn't want to report this or talk about it with anyone.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Philip Dubay is joining me, veteran trial lawyer out of the LA jurisdiction. Dubay, we're seeing a whole nother animal right now. We've heard about beatings and draggings and yanking people by their hair and kicking them. And that's something that a lot of people see, whether it's in the movies, whether they've seen it in real life. But dangling someone off a 17th floor balcony, that's a whole nother thing that really can't be made up.
No, of course not. But how I would play it if I were his counsel is, like you said earlier, is it real or is it just real testimony? Because if you remember, it came out that she was hooked on ketamine and all kinds of other drugs that are various types of anesthetics that put you in a trance-like state, almost in a twilight state. So who really knows what, if anything, she accurately members. And it is not.
If she and Cassie were doing drugs, where do you think they got those drugs, Dubay?
Let's give them that.
From Cobb?
Let's really pretend he was plying them with dope. It is not his MO to be defenestrating people. It's just simply not the case. But I think better yet is that just because he is in a respondeat superior mob boss, he can be acting in his individual maniacal capacity unmedicated. That does not fall under RICO. It falls under state crimes, and the statutes of limitation have run. So what the feds are doing is they're using RICO as an end run around the state statute of limitations that local DAs blew.
Okay, you know what's interesting? I'm going to try to pretend I didn't hear anything Dubay just said because it was like, blah, 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 blah. Lynn Shaw is joining me, founder and director of Lynn's Warriors, committed to ending sex abuse and sex trafficking on women and girls. You know what? Every time we hear about a pimp, branding, let's go with branding a victim, or threatening her in some bizarre way, or torturing her in some unorthodox manner. And I came up with branding because of a famous case we were just investigating where all of the victims were branded. And it really sticks out in your mind because it's unusual. You don't hear of it very often. But actually, what Sean Combs is accused of doing here is no better than what pimps do to women under their control.
What we're forgetting here in all of this discussion is we saw that woman on the video, you know, calling out how great Diddy is, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, and alleged crimes. We know all this. But how about, you know what's being lost here? All of the women and victims, and not only of Diddy's, because every single day at my organization and other coalition organizations across the United States, guess what, Nancy? We have to put out statements to all of our survivors around the country because they're so triggered from hearing all of this. And on top of it, I want to point out, Anthony, I hope you're booked to testify or something. I hope they have some trauma bonding specialist going in there, psychoanalysts, psychologists, to explain about this trauma bonding, trauma, vulnerable witnesses. And let me also point out, I don't want to hear about drugs. You know why? Because anybody who is addicted, and these, Cassie herself admitted, drugs, drugs, drugs. And you know what? They will do anything to stay by that person who will supply the drugs, including taking beatings, doing crimes for them. So we've got to turn this around, and we've got to support victims across the country in this story, because I'm getting tired of every single day. I don't know how to explain it to them. And we're in week four. They're asking what's going on. They are so triggered. And we have lawyers all over televisions and online talking about things, putting ideas out there. This case cannot be sex trafficking. It's not going to be, you know, Mann Act, this, that, and the other thing. It better darn well be RICO case, criminal enterprise. Because you know what? The only thing in my mind that makes all of this stick is, no matter what happens at the end of the day, is that Cassie video in that hotel hallway. And that's all. I hope they convict him. That's my on that.
You know, the more the defense objects to any particular line of questioning, the more sensitive it is, right? The more you scream at the dentist office, it's because that's the more it hurts, right there on that particular tooth. And they went after this witness tooth and nail. To Lauren Conlon, there was quite a cross-examination of her on the stand. What happened?
During Nicole Westmoreland's cross-examination of Brianna Bongolin, she also got her to say that after a week after the alleged balcony incident, Brianna was going to private parties with Sean Combs. And she was actually texting back and forth with Cassie a few days later about having a sleepover. So Westmoreland said to her, you know, this horrible thing happened to you, and a week later, you're willing to go back and have a sleepover. And Bongolin just said, I guess so. And there was some tense moments going back and forth because of her original civil suit. She did fire her attorney, Tyrone Blackburn. He came up a number of times today because she said that he kind of misinterpreted what she said and alleged some kind of sexual assault happened, or did he groped her when lifting her up as he allegedly dangled her. And Westmoreland said, well, you know, you fired Blackburn, but you still perpetuated this lie, so to speak, with your other attorneys in that lawsuit and your new updated lawsuit as well. Did you not? And, you know, she kind of said, well, I didn't write all of that in the new lawsuit, my attorneys did. So it was just a lot of back and forth about that, and very tense. I'm not going to say it was hostile, but it was uncomfortable, and it was aggressive. And it was a lot of, can you rephrase this? Can you rephrase that? And I think that was just causing just some discomfort in the gallery, I guess. It was tedious. It was long. But I would say the points were well taken, and the cross was well taken.
Ruh-roh, busted. Diddy Bucks. Diddy allegedly paid off an employee millions and millions of dollars to keep these victims quiet.
He is used to throwing money at any situation to get what he wants.
$100,000 Diddy Bucks. We are live at the courthouse. Standing by is investigative reporter Lauren Conlon. Let's go straight to the Monahan courthouse. Lauren Conlon, we just brought up in conversation drug use, where Dubé tries to victim blame the victims here and Cassie, claiming that they were on drugs. Well, maybe they were, but even a woman on drugs can be abused, or a woman that's had a drink can be abused, or a woman that wore a short skirt or went jogging by herself or walked from the Target to her car in the parking deck and got kidnapped. All of those people that did something wrong can become victims. What can you tell me about drugs being discussed in the courtroom?
Westmoreland also really focused on the heavy drug use that Cassie and Bongolin once partook in. We talked about drugs for a significant amount of time, and in my opinion, that was just to remind the jury that maybe her memory is not so great after doing so many drugs. But overall, it was sad to watch her on the stand. She really seemed to have some PTSD over this incident, and who wouldn't?
And what is that, Dr. Bethany Marshall, PTSD?
Post-traumatic stress disorder is when somebody has had such a traumatic event that no prior learning can equip them or prepare them to handle the situation. Flashbacks, avoidance of anything that reminds them of the dreaded situation, tearfulness, isolation, numbing. Nancy, I think the numbing is particularly important because women who are sex trafficked often become addicted to drugs by their johns, and they are primed for addiction because they're trying to numb out to tolerate the abuse. And these dreams, these night terrors, are a flashback. And we think of the avoidance, which is the primary hallmark of PTSD. These women are primed to go through the rest of their life avoiding relationships, conflict, anything that could remind them of all the trauma and the abuse that they suffered.
Speaking of drugs, whatever happened to the drug mule that allegedly worked for Sean Combs? Where is he in this scenario? Listen.
While Sean Combs' legal troubles are far from over, his so-called drug mule has completed the requirements of his plea deal, and all charges against him have been dropped. Brendan Paul faced charges for possession of both cocaine and marijuana when he was caught with the substances on Diddy's private jet back in March. But as a first-time offender, Paul was allowed to enter a pre-trial diversion program with the benefit of a clean record on successful completion.
I wonder if Brendan Paul is going to be part of the state's case regarding Sean Combs' drugs. And here it is, you're blaming the victims for allegedly using drugs, but yet nobody's saying who supplied them the drugs. Where'd they come from? And in the last hours, we have heard for the first time about GHB, gamma hydroxybutyrate, being given to a victim. We heard that at the get-go when this was all just swirling as gossip. Speaking of drugs, no one can get out of their mind the mansion raid video. This is from our friends at TMZ. Now, isn't it true, Sydney Sumner, drugs were found during the raid?
Yes, Nancy. There were a good number of drugs recovered from Sean Diddy Combs' Miami mansions. Now, this property is actually two separate houses that Sean Combs has combined into one large estate. And there were pills, powders, and my personal favorite was a giant green trunk that had Diddy written on the side of it that was stock full of marijuana and marijuana associated products.
Yeah, it even said Diddy on it. Okay, who's going to claim, oh, that's not mine. It has his name on it, for Pete's sake. I mean, how vain, Rob Shooter. You got your drug bag with your name engraved on it, really?
Stupid, absolutely stupid. Now, I was looking at that footage, though. Diddy was a real neat freak, so that is not how his office would be. If you looked at my office, it might look a little like that, even without a raid. But Diddy was very, very neat, and so this is not how his office would have been. So they really searched. They really looked deeply in there, and they found what I think are the goods. And ultimately now, his name's on it. It was in his house. He's going to own this.
Okay, so, hey, look at all those tennis shoes. Man, that's thousands and thousands of dollars. Again, this is from our friends at TMZ, my friend Harvey Levin. Shooter, you very carefully sidestepped any drug use you observed while working for Sean Combs.
I would never sidestep.
Don't lie to me.
You, Nancy Grace, I would tell you everything. Anything you want, ask away.
Combs use drugs?
I would guess yes. I didn't see him do drugs. There were times when I was with him I really didn't. And there was times when you'd get really odd texts, emails from him. And now looking back, I'm assuming that those times he was on drugs. I didn't see him do drugs.
And I guess part of it is, Shooter, that when you saw him, it was for like a photo shoot or completing his, you know, videography, everything that he was doing. But it's very hard when you're hooked on drugs to separate it. As a matter of fact, I wonder if you somehow missed this, Shooter, that Louis Vuitton bag Sean Combs carried with him everywhere. It was stuffed with Viagra and some really potent form of Viagra, Advil, water pills, pills to increase his sperm count, cash, ecstasy, Percocet. It goes on and on. Stuffed with it, his Louis Vuitton bag. And went everywhere with drugs. Yet now we're hearing an attack on the victims because they may have used drugs.
The hypocrisy is not lost on me. He did travel with a bag. His assistant always had a bag. I assumed it was grooming products. I really did. I sound stupid and naive about it, but I didn't know that this
bag was Viagra and Astroglide, man. Viagra and Astroglide.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
To the courthouse, standing by, Lauren Conlon. Lauren, we also heard in detail from a videographer, a video expert, Frank Piazza. What happened?
We heard from the government expert, Frank Piazza, who works for legal and audio video. He's a forensic video expert. And essentially, his testimony for the government was that he put together the surveillance footage from the Intercontinental Hotel and the cell phone footage that we've seen previously. He put this together chronologically. He described why certain things happen, why sometimes the timestamps skip ahead. He said that sometimes there are, you know, 30 frames in a second, but we're seeing 22. He explained that, you know, when we are looking at this, he inserted black spots or a black screen when seconds were skipped, and these seconds were skipped due to motion sensors and all of that type of forensic video stuff that a lot of us don't understand, but we were really trying to. But essentially, he wanted us to know that really nothing was altered, and the video is a good depiction of what we saw in the hallway on March 5th, 2016. Which, of course, is the infamous video of Cassie being tragically beaten.
And Lauren Conlon, of course, that did not stop the defense from a vigorous cross-examination, right? What happened?
When Tenny Garagos did the cross-examination, she just wanted to point out certain things that maybe skipped ahead too much. You know, there were five-second differences in certain frames, because the motion sensor wasn't picking up on any motion. So, for example, we saw Diddy, you know, a bag was in his hand and then the bag was dropped. And this happened because 5 seconds were skipped because of, again, a motion sensor. So she just wanted to make it clear that certain angles we saw in this video, things weren't quite as fast moving as it would seem because of certain just issues because of the way that the surveillance footage was shot. It was an older system at the time. And again, that testimony, I think a lot of us were really focused on trying to understand it, as well as the jury.
Mm-hmm. Joining me now, an expert to break it all down for us, Todd Shipley, digital cybercrime expert, former detective sergeant with Reno PD, 25 years in LA law enforcement, and author of Surviving a Cyber Attack and Investigating Internet Crimes. Thank you for being with us. You can find him at Dark Intel Info. Todd Shipley, what is she saying? What were they trying to do on the stand?
Well, the prosecution was trying to introduce the film that was a video recording of a video recording of what occurred. And so they successfully got it in. The testimony wasn't really rebutted, although the defense tried to set up that there were some issues with the film itself and the timestamps. But all that was clearly defined and identified by the witness to say that it's normal behavior because of how the film was made, which was a iPhone video of another video. And so they were able to get it, you know, clearly introduced. And it's going to be damning evidence, along with all the other, you know, potential evidence that exists, because there's 90 pieces of digital evidence that are going to come in. that the FBI has taken.
Where do you get the number 90 pieces?
Well, it's been reported in the news that there's that many pieces of evidence that were taken from the various search warrants of his properties. So we'll see how that, whether that all comes out, whether how much of it gets introduced. But there's a lot of digital evidence potentially in this case to reflect on what occurred.
You know what, Todd Shipley, it's a good thing the state had this witness, Frank Piazza, on the stand, because they could have just introduced the video already. But if they hadn't had that witness on the stand, they could have used those glitches in the video and claim that it had been tampered with and it wasn't real. They could argue that in their closing statement. So thank goodness they had Piazza, right?
Exactly. I mean, he clearly identified why those things occurred and how they occurred. And without his testimony, you're correct, they would have said that there was a problem with the film. And he shut down that whole defense that there was a problem with the film. Unless they bring somebody else on to dispute it, you know, it's going to stand that the video is as was shown, and there's, you know, not going to be a defense against it.
Lauren Conlon at the courthouse, the Monahan courthouse. Lauren, I'm very curious about how the jury is reacting to what's happening.
I have to try so hard to not make any type of expression or face when I am watching that video. I'm in a new spot today in the courtroom, so I was observing the jury. And most of the jurors still don't have a reaction to watching that video over and over again, although there is one man that does seem very pained by it. He kind of has his head down. You know, you can kind of see him sort of shaking from time to time.
You hear that, Dubé? It's the death knell. You see a juror hanging their head during the testimony. It's the death knell. Response?
That's only one out of 12. Remember, you got to get a dozen or a baker's dozen, assuming you get one kicked and have to put in an alternate. One does not get you a verdict. Period. If anything, that would be a defense win. And by the way, I have learned over the years, I do not ever judge my success during a trial based on the nodding, the grimacing of a juror, or notes that they're taking, because all the magic changes
I'm hearing something from the courthouse. Oh, yeah, it's Diddy's death knell. We wait as justice unfolds. And now we remember an American hero, Sergeant Floyd Miles, Charles City County Sheriff's Office. Passed away in the line of duty and leaves behind grieving wife Denise and children Stephen, Rashad, and Taquan. American hero Floyd Miles. Nancy Grace signing off. Goodbye, friend. This is an iHeart podcast, guaranteed human.